You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, March 21st, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. Donald Trump's darkest days. Comey and Rogers dropped the hammer yesterday. And today, Democrats' Gorsuch strategy goes beyond Gorsuch. Ryan and the Republicans launch a Hail Mary on repeal and replace. The vote is on Thursday. Meanwhile, the Texas AG does not want Muslims praying in the school prayer rooms.
And defile the prayer.
Judge Napolitano can't handle the truth. Oh, actually, no. I'm sorry. He just got booted off of Fox.
I like how
is he suspended?
I think he's suspended. It's a new reason for getting suspended. It's like, don't you understand? The president will literally take anything you say. You got to be careful.
On one hand, Judge Napolitano gets suspended from Fox for saying things that could be repeated by a president. And Tomi Lahren got suspended from Glenn Beckistan because they found out she was 12. Is that not true?
I didn't know that she was so
It was
young.
Because she is pro-choice, and she said that Republicans who aren't are hypocrites.
For being big government.
Martin McGuinness, IRA leader, and peacemaker dies. And Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, I'm sorry, what's his real name?
Wayne Tracker.
Wayne Tracker.
No, his real name is Rex.
Has decided to skip the NATO meeting. But will be...
Where's the oil at?
Well, oddly enough, then heading to Russia. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Folks, you know, the theme around here has been Democrats have to walk and chew gum. And we're only halfway through today's questioning of Neil Gorsuch. And I can tell you, this is the most practiced I have ever seen anyone in any situation, anywhere, at any time. I mean, this guy has like literally every single one of his gestures down. He had his notes. He is very, very prepared for this. However, I guess even down to feigning the sort of confusion he had about all the stuff he had advised George Bush on in terms of signing that signing statement that basically allowed Bush to sidestep the anti-torture laws passed during his administration. We'll get into the specifics of Gorsuch. But look, what is clear is, well, there's two things that are clear about with Gorsuch. Gorsuch is going to be confirmed one way or another. The question is, can the Democrats hold together a filibuster once it gets to the Senate floor and force McConnell to nuke the filibuster on Gorsuch's behalf and then allow basically then... That's that. I happen to believe it's time to get rid of the filibuster. It's not really worth it if you can't use it anyways. I think these are extraordinary circumstances. You had Lindsey Graham attempting to justify why they didn't give a hearing to Merrick Garland. But the really exceptional thing that has come out of this so far, and all we saw yesterday were the opening statements by Democrats yesterday was, and we'll circle back to this, I'm not going to quite cover it, but I just want to give you the headline here. The headline is, the Democrats, in attacking Gorsuch, are actually creating a narrative that is bigger than Gorsuch. I don't know if this is indicative of what it's indicative of, but there were some really great statements yesterday from Sheldon Whitehouse, Senator from Rhode Island, Al Franken, even Dianne Feinstein, as she was going through her questions today, landed on this theme, an anti-corporate, a protection for the citizen versus big business theme. And it was hit over and over again. And it speaks to a larger problem with our government, and it speaks to a dynamic that I think clearly can resonate with the country. I mean, there's some interesting stories. There's some very interesting polling that has been taking place. And you're seeing all these stories about Republicans who are, I should say, Trump voters who are regretting that they voted for Trump because they just found out that the Affordable Care Act is Obamacare and that, hey, Trump may have not really had the deepest connection to the things he was saying. And there's good news on that, I should say. Good news on the idea that Donald Trump does not have the deepest connection to the words that he said. In fact, he just got some advice from one of his key advisors, Bill O'Reilly, who has basically said to the president, well, I'll let Bill O'Reilly. So for those of you who are feeling, who were duped by Donald Trump, who thought that he was actually going to expand healthcare coverage and make it cheaper for you.
Psych.
And feel like, oh my God, can I ever trust this president again? Or those of you who are feeling like, I thought that Obama wiretapped Trump Towers.
He did.
Or
he's black.
Or even that you took his word on what was being said in a hearing where he was contemporaneously fact-checked.
Probably a bad idea.
I've got good news. Because his milkshake buddy, Bill O'Reilly, has given him a new piece of advice.
Mr. Trump is so infuriated that the media has obsessed on the alleged Russian connection that he lashed out, trying to create a firestorm over the Obama administration's surveillance history. Problem is, there's no evidence that anything happened at the Trump Tower. There is evidence that the Obama administration surveilled journalists and even the German chancellor, but that does not go to President Trump's point. The accusation that President Obama was actively involved in harming the Trump campaign has now harmed the president himself. He needs the American people to focus on the economy, the new health care proposal, border security, not alleged conspiracies. In the future, the president would be wise to embrace only facts in his pronouncements.
There you have it, folks. So if you are one of those people who felt duped by President Trump, good news. There's a good reason to believe that going forward, he's only going to embrace only facts in his future pronouncements.
I'll give you some facts, Bill. Your family doesn't love you. You're an alcoholic.
All right, so
you're drinking your liver out. I'm president, you're not.
So there's I've said that, you know, we've seen this rash of reporting of former Trump voters, or I should say Trump voters, who are now regretting their decision. And there was a new report out this month from the Democracy Corps and Roosevelt Institute. They're both, lefty think tanks.
It's Roosevelt. I just read up on this yesterday.
Well, you say Roosevelt, I say Roosevelt.
Well, the Roosevelts say Roosevelt.
They can say what they want. Okay. Until they're here, it's Roosevelt.
You don't boss me around as to the wheelchair guy.
So, the Roosevelt Institute. it was a focus group conducted with 35 white voters in Macomb County, Michigan. They didn't have college degrees. They voted for Obama at least once and identified as independents, Democratic, leaning independents, or Democrats.
You know what Macomb is too, right? That's an important, that's the home of the polling of the Reagan Democrats.
Right. And Macomb went for Obama both in 2008 and 2012, but then flipped to Trump in 2016. These voters said that they mistrust Republican congresspeople, lawmakers. The voters trusted Trump, however, based on his promises to quash government corruption, bring back jobs, put America first, and lower health care costs.
Wow.
I mean, so much for that.
Something else.
But the good news here is that basically everything that they are supportive of were actually leftist rhetoric, it turns out, leftist attacks on the status quo in this country. It does also, however, in this report, expose a certain amount of racism that these people had, but that it's exacerbated by their economic situation. So there's some examples, and this is most of this is drawing on the work of Eve Pazer, who writes about this in Vice. There was one woman there who explained, I went and finally signed up for Medicaid, and I'm standing in the damn welfare office, and I'm looking around at all these people that can't even say hello to me in English. I bet you they could. But they're all there with appointments for their workers, which means they have the health care, they have the food stamps. If you can come from somewhere else, why can't we all get it? Right? Now, this is important. It's not just like, I don't want them to get it. It's like, why can't we all get it?
Many similar comments in Kentucky around that program.
Yes. There was a chorus of hostility, Pudzer.
Actually.
The chorus was a hostility from Trump supporters toward immigrants who don't assimilate, specifically by not speaking English. A number of them complained about being denied food stamps when they were in need, while also rejecting the notion that they benefited from white privilege. So these aren't necessarily the most woke people, as it were. But there's also a sense it's easier to trigger these resentments when people feel like they are getting screwed themselves. Now, this is a fairly obvious dynamic. Another quote. It's almost like you wonder, how are they working the system that you're not? Chris, another study participant responded. A third, Matt, responded by suggesting perhaps we're checking the wrong box when we're filling out paperwork, meaning they'd be provided with social services they desperately need if they weren't white. Many of the study's participants liked Trump because he was willing to tell white people that they were getting the short end of the stick. But she writes also, but what's also clear is that these people really want better access to food stamps and other social services. So they are not hostile to what Democrats are offering. They are just mad that they don't feel like they're getting them.
You know, three just quick points on that. I think they might be hostile, though, to means testing and non-universal programs. Well, so that is unfortunately what a lot of Democrats are offering.
Yes, true. That's true. And, you know, one of the problems with the Affordable Care Act is, like, you know, we saw this in Kentucky, right, where people are like, I'm at 140% of poverty, and I'm getting subsidies, but it's still costing me an arm and a leg to get health insurance. If I was a little bit poorer, I'd be getting Medicaid, which is, you know, people are living basically in the same area. They're probably not having access to any better care. It's just that it's covered. It's
or when people consciously make choices at certain points to keep their income down so they stay eligible
There's always going to be a problem with any type of program like that. And it's not, it shouldn't exist in maybe any of these programs. But there's a certain inevitability if you set up a program to have a dividing line that there's always going to be that problem around that line. But broadly speaking, that's why you go with a universal program.
That's
right?
Exactly right. And that's what they would respond to. And can I just, the other two really?
I'm going
to
be bummed.
Yeah.
If I'm making $150,000 a year, and if I was making $145,000 a year, my kid is going to get free college. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to quit my job.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's make it universal. That also makes
those programs vulnerable to be racialized and to be cut. And in the original polling on Reagan Democrats in the same county, they identified probably more overt racism than they're identifying now. But as I recall reading Stan Greenberg on it, they said, both Democrats are right about corporations. They perceive them as being better on that than Republicans. But they pretty much were like, neither party is going to be able to rein in corporate abuse because corporations pretty much run everything. But at least Republicans will attack racial minorities. So that was basically how they broke it down.
And the writer here makes the point: Democrats don't have to abandon or even de-emphasize support for minorities and for women or any of this. It's just that they've got to walk and chew gum.
And the real deplorables are not, that is where it will be a problem. But there are these people who,
absolutely,
it's just like what Bill Fletcher Jr. said.
You're not
going to
get the locker ups.
Yeah, you're not going to get the locker ups. Screw them. Don't worry about it. Fuck them.
Screw them.
Exactly. Excuse me.
But there are votes to get out there that theoretically, the Democrats support that are not, let me put it this way, the programs that Democrats support or supposedly support or the broad principles that Democrats supposedly support are not alienating those voters.
I would have won is another way of having this conversation. You stupid bastards.
Yeah.
But no, was so important not elect me and have universal programs so we could have Rihanna, or not even Rihanna, Lena Dunham rallies in friggin' Ohio. You idiots.
All right, so let's go back to the Comey hearings yesterday, and then I want to circle back to what's happening with Gorsuch, because what's happening with Gorsuch at least, you know, indicates to me that the Democrats are approaching this in the right way, and are looking at Gorsuch as less an opportunity to, and I don't know what's going to happen, whether or not they get the votes to actually filibuster. I hope they do. But at the very least, there's an understanding by a group of Democrats that we need a message that's going to be bigger than, that's going to be a deeper, more protractive narrative that we need to pursue. When they get into office someday, whether or not they carry that out, that's going to be a function of how much we hold them to their promises. But we'll circle back on that. I want to go to the Comey hearings because let's play with this first clip. Is Trey Gowdy. We played a couple of clips yesterday, but you'll recall that I guess about, I don't know, two or three months ago, I had this theory that I have come to actually think may have more legitimacy than I thought at first. And that was how to explain Jim Comey's releasing of that letter about Hillary Clinton, which turned out to be one of the but-fors, I think, that cost her the election. It shouldn't have been that close. I think there were other issues, but there's a lot of data to support that if Jim Comey doesn't do that, she wins the election. And it has been speculated. There's still anger at Jim Comey right now for costing Hillary Clinton the election, but that he did it on purpose. And that just never tracked with me, because who would have believed that she was that Donald Trump was going to win that election? Do you have that clip that I sent you? The one I emailed you? Yes. Okay. Let's play this one. Let me just make this point here. I don't think Jim Comey thought that letter was going to help. I think he thought when he released that letter that Hillary Clinton was going to be the president. And here is more evidence of the state of mind. He's not speaking about himself, but of the state of mind that Jim Comey had when he released that letter. Here it is.
Do you think that the Russians expected Secretary Clinton to win the election?
Yes, as of August, certainly. August, September.
Okay, Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Comey, you indicated as of August, September. Do you believe they ever came to a conclusion that, you know what, Mr. Trump's going to win?
No, the assessment of the intelligence community was that early on, they thought he might have a shot. And so they wanted to mess with our election, hurt our country in general. That's always the baseline. They hated her, Secretary Clinton, wanted to harm her and thought it might have a chance to help Mr. Trump, and then later concluded that Mr. Trump it was hopeless, and they would focus then on just trying to undermine Secretary Clinton, especially with the European allies.
Got that. So up until summer and through the fall, they believed that Secretary Clinton would win. Is that true?
I think the assessment was late in the summer, they concluded, based on the polling I think a lot of people were reading, that Mr. Trump didn't have a chance, and they shifted to just focusing on just trying to undermine her.
And I tell you, if you were to tell me, and I know you didn't, but I'm just saying, if anyone were to tell me that they concluded Mr. Trump was going to win, I'd just say they're nuts. Because there was no one in the world who thought that. Every media organization, every political organization, every government organization that I'm familiar with last fall thought that Secretary Clinton would be the next president of the United States.
I think the Russians agreed.
Absolutely, they did agree.
Now, this guy, Chris Stewart, is trying to make the argument that the Russians weren't trying to help Donald Trump. And it's, I don't know, it's a pretty thin slice here that they were just trying to undermine the U.S. government. Now, it doesn't mean that Donald Trump thought he was going to lose. But the point is, it's clear to me that Jim Comey there, for him to believe in October that he could swing the election by releasing that letter, just seems absurd. So why did he do it? Well, we know he told the public yesterday, God knows where they told, private session, that they had an ongoing investigation as early as July of the Trump organization, if you will. And we know that in October, when he released that letter, there was an ongoing investigation of the Trump organization, because that investigation continues now. And my theory was that maybe he did that because he knew he had a real investigation with Trump. He knew that the Clinton investigation was done. But Donald Trump, remember, threatened Hillary Clinton with prosecution. So if Hillary Clinton becomes president and her head of the FBI, James Comey, prosecutes Donald Trump, what's the narrative? The narrative is she just did this because Donald Trump had threatened her with it. So if I'm Jim Comey and I'm not terribly savvy, or I think this is a slam dunk and I'm going to prove that I am that buttoned up FBI head. I'm going to be very explicit with this letter because I know this is going to inoculate Hillary Clinton and I, James Comey, from any talk of political retribution when I could very well bring charges against Donald Trump or his close associates. I don't know when this this investigation will end. Maybe it'll be in May. Maybe it'll be in June of next year, but it'll be President Clinton. I mean, that theory is starting to make more and more sense to me. Because what else could it be? I mean, this guy's actually thinking that Clinton's going to be the president and he did this to, you know, I mean, that's not going to help you. You still got to work there, right? I mean, it would be a really uncomfortable work environment, it seems to me. But we don't know. But that exchange, I think, at least gives us a look into the state of mind that Comey had. Because Comey's saying, like, look, the Russians believe what everybody believed. Now, maybe he was thinking, like, I know better than the Russians and everybody else how to measure what's going on with the polls. But I think that's
highly
unlikely. So that's one theory. Now, to press on with this investigation, Trey Gowdy, who continues to be an
that
impressive
guy
hack.
He is an extraordinary hack.
All right, here he is. This is a amazing work by Trey Gowdy here, because what he's doing is he's both foreclosing the biggest reason why there were leaks. Remember, now in this hearing, the Republicans are completely focused on leaks. That's all well and good, but I would call it whistleblowing. And I'll tell you why I would say that afterwards. But here's Gowdy. He's trying to do two things, basically. One, foreclose any legit reason why there were leaks and ones that would reflect badly on the administration. And two, he's trying to basically create another fictional narrative about the whole Obama deep state. And here it is.
Well, Director Comey, there's been some speculation this morning on motive. I'm not all that interested in motive. First of all, it's really hard to prove. Secondarily, you never have to prove it.
Pause it. Motive is really hard to prove. However, insinuation and inference and rumor, that's easy. All I got to do is just keep talking for the next minute 30, and I'll be able to achieve that. Remember, after this clip, he goes on and names like a half a dozen Obama officials, former Obama officials. But let's just hear what he has to say here.
But I get that people want to know. I get the jury always wants to know why. I think you and I can agree there are a couple of reasons that you would not have to unlawfully, feloniously disseminate classified material. It certainly wasn't done to help an ongoing criminal investigation because you already had the information, didn't you?
Again, I can't answer in the context of this particular matter.
How about in theory? Is there something a reporter would have access to that the head of the FBI would not?
It's hard for me to answer. I would hope not when it relates to the
FBI. I would hope not, too, since it's part of our surveillance programs. I would hope that you had access to everything as the head of the world's premier law enforcement agency. I would hope that you had it all. So if you had it all, the motive couldn't have been to help you because you already had it. And Admiral Rogers, the motive couldn't have been to help you because you already had it. So in the universe of possible motives for the felonious dissemination of classified material, we could rule out wanting to help the intelligence communities and the law enforcement communities. Those are two motives that are gone now. That leaves some more nefarious motives. Is the investigation into the leak of classified information, has it begun yet?
I can't say, because I don't want to confirm that that was classified information.
Okay, two important things here. One is, he defines the universe of possible motivations as to why someone leaked. And what he does know is that it wasn't done to help the ongoing investigation by the FBI or by the NSA. He knows that. But in fact, I think he knows something very different. I think he knows that those leaks were specifically so that Comey could come in front of that committee, both in public and private. Because why is he there? He has been authorized by the Justice Department. And what does he mean when he says he's been authorized by the Justice Department? Does that mean that Jeff Sessions signed off on this? No, because Jeff Sessions, following those leaks, recused himself, had to recuse himself. He is there because a former Obama Department of Justice official okayed his going and revealing that there was an ongoing investigation. It's going to be interesting to see if we get any more leaks. They certainly seem to have stopped for the past couple of weeks, and it's the first time we've seen that. And it's because Comey is able to continue his investigation. It's quite clear those leaks were a function of a perceived or real threat to quashing that investigation at the in the White House. And Trey Gowdy is taking advantage of the fact that he knows Comey is not going to say that in public. He doesn't have to now because Jeff Sessions has recused himself. And Gowdy is going to make it like Gowdy's just shrunk what he calls the universe of possible motivations. And there's one more thing from this clip that's really important. You notice that Comey won't even say that they're investigating the leaks because he doesn't want to validate that there were leaks. Because if you validate that there were leaks, that means that what people read in the newspaper was true. And he doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want in any way, as a matter of policy, to indicate that anything in there may or may not be true. So he just won't even acknowledge an investigation into the leaks because he doesn't want to validate that they were leaks because they can't be leaks if they're fictional. Here he does this again, okay? Here Comey refuses to say that we're investigating leaks because he doesn't want to acknowledge that there was a leak, that that information was real. Because anybody can go to to a reporter and say, hey, man, Barack Obama wiretapped the Trump Tower. And
I guess you could also just tweet it.
Comey will come out and say, that's not true. So that's not a leak.
That's when a falsehood.
It's a falsehood. But when there is a leak, he won't indicate that there's an investigation into a leak because he didn't want to validate the leak. Here he is doing that. And this is important for what Comey says at the end of his testimony to Gowdy.
Simply asking you to assure the American people, you've already assured them you take it really seriously. Can you assure them that it is going to be investigated?
I can't, but I hope people watching know how seriously we take leaks of classified information, but I don't want to confirm it by saying that we're investigating it. And I'm sorry I have to draw that line. I just think that's the right way to be.
Oh, poor Trey Gowdy, he's so mad.
I'm not going to argue with you, Director
Comey. I'm not going to argue with you, Director Comey. I'm going to saddle up here and ride off into the sunset. But before he does,
I'm just going to perspire a
little
more.
Before he does, so Trey Gowdy ends his, and this is why that little clip is important. Trey Gowdy ends his questioning, and Comey, and I don't know if this is inadvertent or if Comey really wanted to make sure this got out there. But Comey says, can I add one more thing? And then, as far as I can tell, Comey confirms that there was a FISA warrant. We don't know this for sure yet. But it's really weird because the only thing we know is some reporting, and there's mixed reporting on this. But listen to this.
Then I'll bet you my fellow citizens are rethinking their side of the equation. Because that U.S. citizen could be them next time. It could be you. It could be me. It could be anyone. until we start seriously investigating and prosecuting what Congress thought was serious enough to attach a 10-year felony to. With that, I would yield back, Mr. Chairman.
Can I just add a response to what you said? I agree with you, Mr. Gowdy. Two things folks at home should know. First, an unauthorized disclosure of FISA is an extraordinarily unusual event, so be assured we're going to take it very seriously, because our trust with the American people and the federal judges that oversee our work is vital. And second, that this conversation has nothing to do with 702. Folks often mix them together. 702 is about targeting non-U.S. persons.
I think that second answer. I think you just. We're going to
take. Hand there.
Let's just go back just to where Comey says this. I want folks at home to know that when you leak an unauthorized leak of FISA information, we're going to take that seriously. Wait, what? I thought you didn't confirm any of these things.
Right.
Too. With that, I would yield back, Mr. Chairman.
Can I just add a response to what you said? I agree with you, Mr. Gowdy. Two things folks at home should know. First, an unauthorized disclosure of FISA is an extraordinarily unusual event, so be assured we're going to take it very seriously, because our trust with the American people and the federal judges that oversee our work is vital. And second...
Pause it. Did he just acknowledge that there was an unauthorized disclosure of FISA?
That's certainly how. I don't understand how else you'd hear it. I mean unless he could always pivot and
maybe
say that he's speaking in generalities.
I can't tell, but I mean, that seems to me to be the first public affirmation that happened.
As I say, I think
because
he still
how do you disclose something that never happened?
Well, I'm sure if they follow up with him, he'll just say, "Well, no, I'm just reiterating that any disclosure of anything,
except for
any
he said
FISA,
on multiple occasions,
yeah,
with the United States,
I'm not going to comment on it because that could confirm an ongoing investigation.
Strange.
No, I think he did it there.
I haven't seen anybody comment on that, so I don't know. I tried to ask Marcy Wheeler about that, but I think...
Marcy.
Well, I did ask Marcy Wheeler, and she wrote a piece on... And maybe we should have her on... Maybe I should have on their show. She wrote a piece about the... about the timing of all this. Because he did not inform the White House. And he had not informed the heads of the intelligence committees. And as far as I can tell, part of that reason may very well have been that they needed to get Jeff Sessions recused and as far away from this as possible before they told Nunes, who, do we have this? Oh, you got to pull this stuff with Nunes, who apparently, even though months ago, was not going to call Stone and our buddy Carter Page. You know more, Michael. This is very exciting. This is very exciting for the show because we just saw an exchange with Trey Gowdy and James Comey where Trey Gowdy's like, is it possible that anybody in the press would know more than you? I mean, you're the head of the FBI. And he's like, no way. But I would imagine that also goes more or less with the head, the House chair of the Intel Committee. And this is so exciting for us here at the Majority Report.
This makes us look really on the ball.
First of all, Roger Stone has been following Michael on Twitter for an extended period of time.
How you doing, bro?
Since like that weird party you went to in... in Florida.
I don't ever feel the need to deny anything that I'm accused of on this show, but I would like to go on the record to deny that one.
And on top of that, Michael does an impression of Carter Page. Meanwhile...
Which Roger Stone really likes. No, I'm just kidding.
The chair of...
I bet he would, though.
The House Intelligence Committee. What's it? Devin Nunes.
Nunes. Yeah, you got it.
Nunes.
Cali, right?
Yeah, from California. This is what he told in the scrum afterwards. This is what he told David Korn. Listen carefully. Reporter says, okay, go ahead.
You haven't heard of Carter Page and all these other people?
So,
I mean, there are about five names mentioned by the Democrats.
I don't know those people.
You've not heard of Carter Page or Roger Stone? You've never read any stories on it?
We got a screwed up video. But he says, so he says, you've never heard of Carter Page or Roger Stone? No, I've heard of Manafort. He's heard of Manafort. He's heard of Manafort. You know where he may have heard of Manafort from? From the fact that for 5 months he was the chair of the Donald Trump presidential campaign.
Yeah, that guy's name was all over the place.
I mean, he was also in...
But I feel like to know who like Carter Page and Stone is, you need to just really be like involved in politics.
In some weird way.
Yeah, you need to have some like professional involvement.
Or have earlier had refused to call them in.
Yeah.
Like specifically by name. Like, I'm not going to call
them. Well, of course
people.
He didn't call them in. He doesn't know who they are.
Right. How could you do that?
Why would I call them in? I've never heard of them.
All right. Let's hear this again. This is a better version of that.
You haven't heard of Carter Page and all these other people?
So.
I mean, there are about five names mentioned by the Democrats.
I don't know those people.
You've not heard of Carter Page or Roger Stone?
No.
You've never
heard
of Manafort. You've never read any stories about any of these people?
I've heard lots of stories, but there was more names than that.
I mean, Carter Page's name was in the dossier. This guy didn't even read that dossier? This is the head of the Intel Committee? I find that hard to believe.
Yeah.
But look.
Also, it's hard to believe that being unaware of Roger Stone is true as well, because he's just totally insane.
Roger Stone has been involved in Republican politics
since at least the 70s.
Half the people
he's involved in the dirty tricks going back to being a college Republican. And then, by the way, I think it's important to always remind people that Paul Manafort and Roger Stone were like top lobbyist strategists in the 80s in the Reagan era. Like these are
young.
No, but I just wanted people to remind themselves that, like, even while they were doing these, first of all, they've done incredibly sleazy things always, and they were never like they weren't marginal figures.
Counterpoint. Counterpoint.
What's the counterpoint?
Counterpoint.
Yes.
You guys say, of course, Devin Nunes knows who Paul Manafort is, but that's probably only because Devin Nunes has got his ear to the ground. Because look, here's Sean Spicer telling us that Paul Manafort, this guy was just like a ship that passed in the night as far as the Trump campaign was concerned.
I believe Paul was brought on sometime in June, and by the middle of August, he was no longer with the campaign, meaning that for the entire final stretch of the general election, he was not involved. And so to start to look at some individual that was there for a short period of time, or separately, individuals who really didn't play any role in the campaign, and to suggest that those are the basis for anything is a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, a bit. I like he was talking about it almost like the way a guy would talk about like a wife that he was married to briefly or something.
Right,
I was nothing.
Exactly. Yeah, no, we got married in Vegas.
Was that even mean?
On a Thursday, and then we had it annulled on Friday. Look, Paul Manafort was there. I mean, he was.
For the nomination win and for the convention,
yes.
Two events?
Yeah.
He
was there in the spring.
He was subject to
officially there in the
he
spring.
He was there as part of the campaign for longer than Steve Bannon.
Yes.
And he didn't have a small part in the campaign. He was running the campaign.
Head of the campaign, yeah.
He was in charge of the campaign. But I like how Spicer's like, Paul Manafort. Oh, yeah. No, I remember that guy. He was the guy who got his T-shirts.
Sean, pretend that you don't even know who he is. Just do it like that. I look forward to Carter Page's interview where he clarifies his relationship with Nunes. I met him, but
that's what he said. That's what I said. That's obviously what our position is.
All right. So, lastly, let's do this, and then I want to play some clips from the hearings. From the Gorsuch hearings. So this was one of the most extraordinary moments in the Comey hearing yesterday. The hearing took place all day. Trump started tweeting out clips of the hearings, but titling them in such a way that was not based on fact. Well, how did his pronouncement was not based on fact.
Said
as
the
Bill O'Reilly.
Russians had no effect on the election.
Hearing so completely vindicates me.
In a moment that rivaled that moment in that Woody Allen movie where Marshall McLuhan comes out and says to that person in the line, like, you don't know anything about my work. They actually took Trump's tweets in real time and read them back to the witnesses. And this is how it went.
Thank you, Mr. Schiff. Gentlemen, in my original questions to you, I asked you whether the intelligence community had undertaken any sort of study to determine whether Russian interference had had any influence on the electoral process. And I think you told me the answer was no.
Correct.
Correct. We said the U.S. intelligence community does not do analysis or reporting on the U.S. political process or U.S. public opinion. That is
okay.
Not our fault.
So thanks to the modern technology that's in front of me right here, I've got a tweet from the president an hour ago saying the NSA and FBI tell Congress that Russia did not influence the electoral process. So that's not quite accurate, that tweet.
I'm sorry, I haven't been following anybody on Twitter while I've been sitting here.
I can read it to you. It says the NSA and FBI tell Congress that Russia did not influence the electoral process. This tweet has gone out to millions of Americans, 16.1 million to be exact. Is the tweet, as I read it to you, the NSA and FBI tell Congress that Russia did not influence the electoral process, is that accurate?
Well, it's hard for me to react to that. Let me just tell you what we understand the state of what we've said is. We've offered no opinion, have no view, have no information on potential impact because it's never something that we looked at.
Okay. So it's not too far of a logical leap to conclude that the assertion that you have told the Congress that there was no influence on the electoral process is not quite right.
Right. It certainly wasn't our intention to say that today because we don't have any information on that subject. And that's not something that was looked at.
Right.
The best.
He said it again.
The best part, the reason why we're laughing, if you can't see it, was when Rogers and Comey look at each other just like, you got to be fucking, you're kidding me.
Head of Seriously? The NSA and CIA conferring about Trump's tweets like live.
Yeah. This is.
and there's a gif out there of Rogers look on his face like, does a double take. Like he just. They they couldn't have in a million years have imagined that they would ever be in this situation. It's just so insane, ladies and gentlemen. So insane.
And then Trump's tweeting at real time, like, but they just reconfirmed.
Look, lastly, let me just say this before we move on. And this has been the point from the beginning. Comey now has the space to do the investigation. The fact that he came in front of the committee makes that clear. They're coming in front of the committee opens that up even more. Chasing down all this stuff, I mean, it's going to take time. There's value here, but the real value in terms of our politics is hopefully what's been going on with the Gorsuch hearing and the way that the Democrats came out during the Gorsuch hearing yesterday. Because even if every one of your fantasies comes true, ranging from Donald Trump is arrested in the White House and then impeached to Donald Trump is hit by a bus, ranging to Donald Trump has a heart attack, or ranging to Donald Trump has a heart attack and then is hit by a bus, or whatever it is.
Fake bus.
The point is, the next day, or probably within moments, Mike Pence is the president. And but for the loose cannon who may get us in a nuke, all of the worst things that we were going to get from a Trump administration are still there with just a slightly higher amount of competence, if not much more competent. And So there needs to
Pence
be.
Is stupid.
Well, Pence
see.
Is stupid, but he's not going to make the mistakes that
not,
Donald
right.
Trump is going to make, that he's made. Like, he's not going to, you know, rip everything in 14 different directions. And so the point is that to fight Trump, you really need to fight the Republicans. And to do that, it can't just be about Russia. It needs to be about politics. It can't be that they have an orange hue about them. It can't be that they are, molesters in chief. It has to be about politics. And yesterday, in the Senate judicial hearing, we heard attacks on Gorsuch. And look, I think it's perfectly legitimate to say we shouldn't even be here because of what happened with Merrick Garland. But we're hearing attacks on Gorsuch that are bigger than Gorsuch, that involve the entire Republican agenda. Here's Al Franken. Here's his volley at this.
One of the ways in which your views are distinct from Justice Scalia's is in the area of administrative law. Just this past August, you wrote an opinion in which you suggested that it may be time to reevaluate what's known as the Chevron Doctrine. Now, in broad strokes, the Chevron Doctrine provides that courts should be reluctant to overrule agency experts when they are carrying out their missions, like when the FDA sets safety standards for prescription drugs. This principle, outlined by the Supreme Court, recognized that our agencies employ individuals with great expertise in the laws that they are charged with enforcing, like biologists at the FDA. And that where those experts have issued rules in highly technical areas, judges should defer to their expertise. Now, administrative law can be an obscure and sometimes complicated area of the law, but for anyone who cares about clean air or clean water or about the safety of our food and of our medicines, it's incredibly important. And Chevron simply ensures that judges don't discard an agency's expertise without good reason. Justice Scalia recognized this to be true. But to those who subscribe to President Trump's extreme view, Chevron is the only thing standing between them and what the president's chief strategist, Steve Bannon, called the quote-unquote deconstruction of the administrative state, which is shorthand for gutting any environmental or consumer protection measure that gets in the way of corporate profit margins. Speaking before a gathering of conservative activists last month, Mr. Bannon explained that the president's appointees were selected to bring about that deconstruction. And I suspect that your nomination, given your views on Chevron, is a key part of that strategy.
I mean, this is an indictment on the entire assault that's happening on our government. It's not a tiny, it's not a specific tiny ruling. It's not going back to the old, tired Democratic playbook. It is talking about the assault on our government by corporations, essentially, and money. And the assault on our government is because government stands in the way of, if the government is protecting consumers and citizens and workers, stands in the way of profit. Not all profit, just profit that is made by offloading certain costs onto the public. So I cut corners and I don't dispose of this waste in the way that I'm supposed to. Instead, I dump it into the river and people get cancer. They bear that cost. I want to use coal because it's cheaper for me. And I put it in the air and kids get asthma. I don't want to do remediation and kids get lead poisoning. We've developed this drug for 5 or 10 years. Looks like it doesn't do exactly what we said it does, but we can make billions of dollars on it.
And that's what all this stuff amounts to, from Paul Ryan's freedom agenda,
yes,
to this notion. I mean, you know, the whole myth of originalism, all of this is just pseudo-intellectual justification for what you're outlining.
And here is an attack on Gorsuch as part of that cog. The guy who really did a really good job on this was Sheldon Whitehouse, who is an attorney himself. I think Franken's the only guy on the committee who's not. And we got two clips from Whitehouse because he's excellent on this. And he basically was all in on this. He makes the argument first, and he goes through a list, and this is just a partial list, of all of the major rulings that have been a function, have been 5-4, that have been a function of basically the Republican wish list. And he's saying this as a guy who sat and heard John Roberts say, I'm just going to be an umpire. Just going to call balls and strikes. And it just so happened that Whitehouse, in retrospect, realizes, like, wow, there were a lot of balls. Whenever it was important for them to get a walk, it was always four balls. It's very strange. Here's Whitehouse going through that list.
Then come decisions that protect corporations who've harmed their employees. In pay discrimination, Ledbetter, 5-4, all the Republicans. In age discrimination, Gross, 5-4, all the Republicans. In harassment cases, Vance, 5-4, all the Republicans. In anti-retaliation cases, Nassar, yep, you guessed it, 5-4, all Republicans. Then there are the decisions that protect corporations from class action lawsuits. Walmart v. Dukes, 5-4, and Comcast, 5-4, both all Republicans. Then there are decisions that help corporations steer customers away from juries and into corporate-friendly mandatory arbitration. Concepcion and Italian Colors Restaurant, both 5-4, both all Republicans. The Iqbal decision, 5-4, all Republicans, help bar the courthouse door for all types of plaintiffs. All of this helps keep corporations away from juries, the one element of government hardest for corporations to control. Indeed, as you know, tampering with a jury is a crime. The court also helps big business against unions. Harris v. Quinn, 5-4, all Republicans. Last year, Friedrichs was teed up as a 5-4 body blow against unions when Justice Scalia died. With a new 5-4 court, they'll be back.
And here, Whitehouse is going through the wide array. And this is also, you know, this is an important clip to share with your friends who think that the Supreme Court's not that important. Who think that, like, you can get through it. I mean, this is important not just in terms of the broader Democratic project, but it's also important to get people on the left to realize just how much damage can be done by a Republican-dominated Supreme Court. We're going to get it. There's going to be another 5-4 Supreme Court. The real question, the only question that's up in the air is it going to be a 6-3? And is that six-person majority going to be under, you know, all but one under the age of, like, 50, 55? Here is Whitehouse. Now, not just he's gone through the list of court cases that have all fallen in favor of corporations under the Roberts Court. But here is how he ties Gorsuch into this. Here's how he talks about the vast machine and the self-perpetuating machine, right? They get people on the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court basically says you can fund these elections, that money is, open the floodgates in terms of money, and it keeps just going. And this is, we're in midstream right now. And here is where Sheldon Whitehouse makes it clear that Gorsuch, however nice of a guy he is a product of that.
A 2014 poll revealed that a majority of Americans think a person won't get a fair shake in this court against a corporation. Now, where do you fit in? When Hobby Lobby was in the 10th Circuit, you held for a corporation having religious rights over its employees' health care. Your record on corporate versus human litigants comes in by one count at 21-2 for corporations. Tellingly, big special interests and their front groups are spending millions of dollars in a dark money campaign to push your confirmation. We have a predicament. In ordinary circumstances, you should enjoy the benefit of the doubt based on your qualifications. But several things have gone wrong that shift the benefit of the doubt. One, Justice Roberts sat in that very seat, told us he'd just call balls and strikes, and then led his five-person Republican majority on that activist 5-4 political shopping spree. Once burned, twice shy. Confirmation etiquette has been unhinged from the truth. Two, Republican senators denied any semblance of due legislative process to our last nominee, one, I would say, even more qualified than you, and that's saying something. Why go through the unprecedented political trouble to deny so qualified a judge even a hearing if you don't expect something more amenable to come down the pike? Those political expectations also color the benefit of the doubt. Finally, the special interests who've done so well in that 5-4 extravaganza of decisions are now spending millions and millions of dollars campaigning to push your nomination. They obviously think you will be worth their money. These special interests also supported the Republican majority keeping this seat open. I'm afraid that all costs whoever now sits in that seat the benefit of the doubt to answer this question. Will you saddle up with the other Republican appointees and launch the court 5-4 again on another massive special interest and Republican election spree? I hope whatever we may disagree about on this committee, we can at least agree that we can't have a court where litigants in these 5-4 decisions can predict how they'll do based on who they are. Because here's what it looks like now. If they're big Republican election interests, they'll win every time. If they're corporations against a human being, they will win every time. And, Your Honor, every time seems like a lot.
It doesn't get much better than that.
Summarizes everything.
He's tying in a bunch of different themes that go far beyond Gorsuch and even beyond the Supreme Court. And that if this is indicative of where the Democrats are going, this is good news. Like I say, they won't be able to stop Gorsuch, but they're creating something that will function after Gorsuch. Right now, in the background here in our studio, Gorsuch is actually being questioned, and we will probably play this clip tomorrow. But there was a story that was written by a former student of Gorsuch's where apparently he told a class of people to raise their hand if they know anybody who's abused maternity leave. And when not enough people in the class, it is, come on, they all do it. And now I guess he's claiming it was just a question in a hypothetical, in a
thought experiment.
Yeah. It's just exercise in intellectual curiosity that I did with these little fucker pricks.
All right. Lastly, let's hear Senator Patrick Leahy continue on with this theme that Sheldon Whitehouse developed, which is the Supreme Court has handed victory after victory to large corporate interests. And large corporate interests have supported your nomination. They think they're going to get their money's worth. Here is Patrick Leahy making that a little bit more explicit.
Now, it becomes more of a problem because it appears the president outsourced your selection to far-right, big money, special interest groups. And you may not like that terminology, but even Republican senators have praised the fact that the president had gone to this group and had a list when he's running for office of who he could select from. The list given not by prepared by him, but by these special interest groups. And they have an agenda. They are confident you share their agenda. In fact, the first person who interviewed you for this nomination said they sought a nominee who understands things like we do.
So there you go. He's referring to the list that was delivered to them by I think it was the Federalist Society or the Heritage Foundation or together. And yeah, Gorsuch was high on the right-wing corporate wish list. And Gorsuch has a real habit of, he's got the Mike Pence sad puppy dog eyes.
Very much.
Yeah. You're really hurting me.
Just so
there's,
sad.
There's an image of it there.
You would reduce my legal career to being a corporate bagman. Just hurts my feelings.
Yeah. I'm really, you can tell he's got his fake look of concern on. I'm really sad to hear you say that about me.
I didn't say that women use maternity leave to hustle their bosses. I said it like this. Sometimes women use maternity leave to manipulate their bosses, and it's really sad.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to head into the fun half. Bonus Tuesday.
Bonus Tuesday. Okay.
There you go.
Giving you some energy
Tuesday.
There.
We gave you some Bonus Tuesday. Folks, just a reminder, this show relies on its membership for 90-some-odd percent of its revenue. Kelly really wants me to break this down and get it nailed down. But it depends on what day it is.
Now I like numbers. That you just invent things.
But seriously, if you have the means, please, you can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. And as a way of saying thank you, we give you some extra content every day. Sometimes more content than we give free. In fact, almost always more content than we give free. That's how we roll. And as always, if you if you're going through a period of financial stress, and you can't afford a membership, but you want access to the fun half, please send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Please bear with us because sometimes it takes us a while to get to emails, and we'll work something out with you. We'll make a deal. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. Also, if you buy crap from Amazon or Jet.com, do so through our links at majorityreportkickback.com. Michael will be doing a Michael Monday tomorrow on Wednesday. I don't know who he's going to have as a guest. He just went to the bathroom, so I have no idea. Oh, should I not have said that?
I don't know.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. There may be one ticket or two tickets left. Is there going to be standing room for the podcast fest? Do we know? We got to check on that.
No, standing room is going to be sold out.
Is it sold out? Is that what they say with those three tickets?
Yeah.
You're serious?
What's a matter of who gets there first, so you don't know if it's going to be standing room or not, but 100 of them are standing room.
Eesh. Get there early. How many tickets do we sell?
Oh my gosh, like it's hard to stand. Well, for some people, but I'm sure that other people would give up their seat if you need a seat.
Wouldn't.
Yes, you would.
Not if I get there early.
You would, for someone with a cane or something, give me a break.
Likely story. I would need to see a medical letter. All right, see you in the fun half.
Oklahoma.